hits those hard ground balls, hard line drives. So Taylor does well to back up and understand that, comes right towards him and has all the confidence in the world there at third base. So one down, Jack Holman is due up. Holman 0 for 1 today. As Anthony Benetti will come set, fire in, first pitch, swing and a miss. Upstairs for a strike, 0-1. No balls, a strike with one out. Benetti sets, serves the 0-1, swing and a miss. An outside edge for a strike once again, 0-2. So Benetti ahead in the count. Looking for his second strikeout of the night. One down. Benetti shakes it off on Jack Holman. The UCLA product stands at 6-4. Benetti fires in the 0-2 just a little bit low of the zone for a ball, 1-2. One-two count with one down. Benetti sets and pushes in the 1-2 as it's dropped into the glove of Duffy. Doesn't matter for a ball, 2-2. Two-two count. Bottom seven, one down. A swing and a ground ball that goes into the glove of Broussard at short and rifles it over to first for the second out. So two down for the Rafters. And this brings up Lucas Schramm, who's had a big day himself. Two hits, two at-bats, and two runs. He's been walked and also had an RBI, so he's had a big day. The Kentucky Wildcat. So two down, Rafters looking for a three up and three down inning here to retire the side. Benetti fires in and the check swing goes behind Duffy for a ball, 1-0. So Schramm wasn't in the lineup earlier today, but here in game two, has surely made his mark. A 1-0 count. Benetti fires in and just below the zone. Well, I would say, I guess the first pitch was barely grazed off the bat. And they're looking at the scoreboard to say if it's a 1-1 count. So umpire just took off his mask, had a word with Schramm. So I guess it's 1-1. It's a 1-1 count. Benetti fires in, a swing and a ball popped out on the right side. And running after it is Gervich. Can he go and grab it as he runs into the wall? He looks to be okay, but man, he was flying after that. Gervich is definitely a guy you want to have on your team. He works his tail off. He's an unbelievable hitter. He doesn't make too many errors at all. So ball and two strikes, two down. And he's a great team player as well. So many of these Rafters are. So 1-2 count, bottom seven. Benetti will come set. Kick, wind, and fire the 1-2. Swing and a line drive that drops into the glove of the shortstop, Broussard, for the third out. So a three up and three down inning as we head to the top of the eighth. Rafters still trail 6-5. We'll step aside. Don't go away. You're on WFH.
Who makes insurance simple? That's easy. Delta Dental of Wisconsin. So if you ask, what company encourages you to use your benefits for regular preventive care? Or who provides quick service online or by phone? Which insurance offers access to the largest provider networks? Or who helps you save money when you need more than a checkup? The answer's the same. Definitely Delta Dental. For dental and vision insurance made simple, choose Delta Dental of Wisconsin and Delta Vision today.
Mid-State Technical College. You belong here. Start your classes and get your degree right here or transfer to your four-year.
Mid-State Technical College. You belong here. In person at four convenient campuses, online or a hybrid.
Mid-State Technical College. You belong here for your Career Accelerator Certificate, a quick way to get ahead in your career.
Mid-State Technical College. You belong here.
Get started at mstc.edu.
Mid-State Technical College. You belong here.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tase at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man? It all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Let's get back to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Top of the eighth we go, and a pitching change on the mound for the Rockers. As Tyler Horvath out of Case Western Reserve, and he's from Twinsburg, Ohio. So the Twinsburg, Ohio native has already had seven games with the Rockers. 2-1 record, 8 2/3 innings pitched. He's had 6 hits and 2 runs allowed, but he's had 12 strikeouts. So the right-hander, the rising senior, is going to look to hopefully get the save here today. So Horvath steps on the mound as Faulkner's day is done. He had a strikeout with 1 2/3 innings pitched, allowing a hit. So this brings up Shane Taylor, who's 1-for-2 today with a run, an RBI, a walk. He's also been struck out, so he's had a little bit of everything. So Shane Taylor had that solo home run in the top of the second where he bombed a ball into right center field. So Taylor due up. So Taylor, Hugo, and Conniff are set to bat here in the top of the eighth. So Tyler Horvath, the right-handed pitcher, deals in for a strike. He's ahead in the count 0-1. Rafters 3 runs in the top of the six, but nothing since then. But they've gotten at least a run in every other inning. So perhaps now's the time as Taylor swings and grounds a ball into the second baseman and Wilson, who flips it over to first on time for one down. So one out, Chris Conniff due up. He was 1-for-3 today with an RBI. He struck out twice. So the Rockers have Holman in right field. Zukowski, who was originally playing left, is in center. And Kyle West is in left field. They brought in Austin Holly at third base. So first pitch comes in for Hugo. He swings down in the dirt. 0-1. Hugo, another great game. 1-for-3 with a run and 2 RBIs today. Had that big double in the top of the six. The 0-1 comes in from Horvath as that's popped away out on the left side. Out of play, 0-2. So top of the eighth inning. Rafters with at least a run in 2-4-6. And now, Eastern Michigan products down in the count 0-2. Horvath looks in. Plays Division III baseball for Case Western as the 0-2 grounded out on the third base line out of play. Count remains at 0-2. It's interesting. You know, especially here at Capital Credit Union Park, the park is always filled with a bunch of people when the game starts. But I would say around the fifth inning, even if the game's good, a lot of people tend to leave, and I guess they got to get home. It is a Wednesday night, but there's some great baseball here as the 0-2 comes in, swing and a miss upstairs for strike three. Hugo slams his bat. He's frustrated with that for 2 down. Hugo just mad at himself for swinging way above the zone, but There's two down. Top of the eighth, Chris Conniff is due up 1-for-3 today with an RBI. And he struck out twice. Four different Raptors in the starting lineup have at least an RBI. And Conniff is one of those guys. He's 1-for-3 as he shows bunt, pulls it away. And third base umpire says he did go. He can't believe that. That's going to be a strike. Brian Dyer over there putting his hands up. Well, the Raptors, he can't believe that either. So it looks like the scoreboard says it's 1-0, but yeah, it is no balls and a strike. So the 0-1, just out of the zone for a ball, 1-1. One ball, one strike. Chris Conniff out of Edmond, Oklahoma, the Wagner College guy. So two down. The 1-1 up and away for a ball, 2-1. Two balls, a strike. Top of the eighth. Rutgers looking to retire the side and have a 3-up and 3-down inning. The 2-1 bounces in the dirt to Hernandez for the third ball. So 3-1. 3-1 count. Rafter is trying to find a way to tie this thing up. If they don't get something going here, they're going to have one more opportunity in the ninth. So the 3-1 inside right down the plate for a strike. Now the count runs full. 3-2 with two outs. Horvath. We'll dig in. He's already had a strikeout today in two down. He sets and throws the payoff. Down low for ball number four. Rocker fans booing the umpire, but Conniff will take first. So the tying run at first. And now this brings up Alex Duffy. But Duffy will head back actually towards the dugout. So it's going to be a pinch hitter. Danny Sheeler now stepping on. So Danny Sheeler will be the guy due up. So he's pinch hitting for Duffy. Sheeler out of Salisbury University and a Towson, Maryland native. So Kirk Schroeder having a word with the umpire. Sheeler, four hits on 16 at-bats. Batting a 250, and perhaps his time could be now to extend this inning. He's had one RBI on the season. So at first is Conniff. Horvath is going to have to set in again. He'll kick and fire as Sheeler swings and a miss on the inside for a strike on one. No balls, one strike. Conniff stands at first. The leading run at the plate, the tying run at first. Horvath kicks and fires in the 0-1, right down the plate for a strike, 0-2. No balls, two strikes, two down. Danny Sheeler looking to make his mark on this game. The 0-2 has a check swing. Did he fully come across? He did not. That goes in for a ball, 1-2. So two straight outs for the Rockers, but Conniff was able to get on first off of a walk. Horvath looks in, fires in the 1-2. Sheeler swing and a miss outside for strike number three. Frustrated about that. But the Raptors trail 6-5 as we head to the bottom of the eighth inning here on WFH.
look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Let's get back to the game here on WFHR.
Bottom of the eighth inning, and the Raptors trail 6-5. So, pitching change for them as Alec Burnett will step in, the Wagner College product, who's had six games, appeared in a returning Rafter. He's had six innings pitched so far, three hits allowed, two runs, and has acquired 10 strikeouts in six innings of work, so a 1.5 ERA. He appeared with the Rafters last season, appearing in 21 games, 26 innings pitched with a 2-0 record and 40 strikeouts. So it looks to be, well, this is interesting as well. So Duffy comes out, and new catcher in for the Raptors, Hogan Alixo, the Creighton product, who caught earlier today, is now stepping in. So Austin Folley is due up. Folley, 1-for-1 today with an RBI. Burnett will set in and fire the first pitch up and away outside for a ball. 1-0. So Folley plays his collegiate ball for the Kentucky Wildcats. The 1-0 bounces in the dirt again from Burnett. 2-0. So can the Raptors hold the Rockers here? Rockers do well on the defensive end. This could potentially be their last at bat as Burnett throws down right down Main Street for a strike, 2-1. Two balls, a strike. There's the 2-1 right down the plate once again. So well done from Burnett to fight back in the count, 2-2. Two balls, two strikes. Burnett kicks, winds, and fires. Swing and a miss down low. Has three straight strikes for Alec Burnett. And he was down in the count, but found a way to get the strikeout. So one down. As this brings up the tall 6'5 products, Mateo Matthews also plays his collegiate ball for Wagner College. So here we go once again. Another collegiate duel between a pitcher and a batter. Burnett, the Wagner College product, on Mateo Matthews, who also goes to Wagner as well. So Burnett fires, and Mateo Matthews swings and flies the ball into shallow right, and reaching out and making the grab is Sailors for two down. So Burnett gets the best of him that time, and he looks over to Matthews and points to the ground like, I'm here. That's funny. Burnett, yeah, he gets the better of Matthews. You know, that's always fun to see when you have those collegiate teammates that meet in the Summer Collegiate League, either on the same team or against each other. It's always more funny when they're against each other because it's always extra motivation. As Blake Wilson will step in now, the Kansas State product, who's 1-for-2. Burnett swings and a miss down low and finds his own. 0-1. One. 0-1 count with two down. Burnett kicks, winds, and fires the 0-1 just outside of the zone. 4-ball, 1-1. So the Raptors looking to either tire the side to have a chance to make something happen in the top of the ninth. 1-1 count with two down. Burnett looks in, kicks and serves the 1-1 down low, and Haligzo was able to catch that. So 2 balls and a strike. 2-1 count. The Raptors retire the side. Can they get the third out? The 2-1. Wilson pops it up out on the backside behind home plate. 2-2. Wilson 1-for-2 with a walk. Out of Kansas State, who also had his collegiate matchup with their starter for the Raptors, Jackson Wentworth. So a lot of familiarities between these two teams. The 2-2 comes in, swing and a miss. That goes right into the glove of Haligzo for strike number 3. So the Raptors are going to head to the top of the ninth. They trail 6-5. Do they have a chance to get a run? We'll find out next here on WFHR, your home for Raptors baseball.
You have been listening to Raptors Baseball here on WFHR. Brought to you by Wisconsin River Orthopedics, Gamber Johnson, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Aspirus Health, Solaris, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Delta Dental of Wisconsin, SNS Distributing, El Cafe, Edward Jones Sky Manning, Comfort Air Heating Cooling Fireplaces, Chris Inda Next Home Partners, and Dixon Gun Shop. Stream every game all season long at WFHR.com or through the Civic Media app.
If you have sustained an injury or have joint pain, you may need Wisconsin River Orthopedics. After a thorough examination, you may be prescribed therapy. Wisconsin River Orthopedics features their own in-house therapy center, staffed by experienced occupational and physical therapy professionals. If you need surgery for your ailment from one of their 4 surgeons, you may need therapy afterwards. Call 715-424-1881 or go to wroinstitute.com. 715-424-1881. Relieving pain and restoring lives.
Raptors Baseball is brought to you by Sharon Zeman, Sky Manning, Clay Kanoki, and Joe Arnold, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisors. Learn how they can help you reach your financial goals. Visit edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Help us fight youth homelessness. Go to covenanthouse.org.
Now, let's get back to exciting Raptors baseball here on WFHR.
To the top of the ninth we go here at Capital Credit Union Park. It's been a long game. It's been back and forth. Raptors have found themselves down 6-5. Rockers looking for 3 more outs to propel them to victory to split this series on the second game of a doubleheader. So we return to the top of the order as Horvath deals in on Nolan Sailors and finds a zone for a strike. Sailors 1-for-4 today. He struck out once. He was able to get a double. 0-1 count. Horvath sets in and fires just outside of the zone. That looked good from here. But it is a ball, 1-1. 1 ball, 1 strike. Tyler Horvath, the 1-1. Just down low for a ball, 2-1. So Sailor's doing well. Stays ahead in the count. The Creighton product on Tyler Horvath. Horvath kicks, winds, in serves the 2-1, bounces in the dirt for three balls and a strike. Horvath, who's already had two strikeouts today, is facing Sailors, who's walked. So Horvath has already walked a guy. He's facing his second one right now. 3-1 count. Horvath kicks and fires a 3-1 swing and a miss inside. 3-2. Sailors, boy, he really wanted a piece of that one. Full count. 3-2. Big pitch here for Tyler Horvath. Sailors. Can he see a ball or can he see a hit? The 3-2 comes in. Swing and a miss outside for strike number three. Sailors goes down. And he was ahead in the count, 3-1, but two straight strikes for Tyler Horvath. Gets his third strikeout, and this brings up Anthony Gallison, 1-for-4 today. So Sailor's frustrated about that, and I don't blame him. Ahead in the count, 3-1, two misses on two swings. So one down, Rockers two away, as Horvath deals in for a ball just above the zone. 1-0. Brendan Bobo is due up next. A 1-0 count. The 1-0 comes in inside of the zone, but finding the left edge. Gallison can't believe it. 1-1 count. One ball, one strike, one out on a late night here on this Wednesday evening. The 1-1 comes down, a curveball just a bit away. Hernandez likes the pitch. And that comes out for a ball, 2-1. The Raptors find something. Can they find anything here? Top of the ninth. They just need a hit. They need a moment. The 2-1 down low and away once again. Four balls, so Gallison ahead in the count, 3-1. Same thing happened to Sailors, but it was two straight strikes from Horvath. You hope not. That's not the case this time. One down, each team with nine hits. The 3-1, inside and away for ball number four. So the tying run at first, Anthony Gallison will take first. Brendan Bobo is due up. He's 1-for-4 today. His only hit came on a triple. He's crossed home plate. He struck out twice. Bobo, three-run home run yesterday. A three-run home run earlier today in the top of the first inning. We would love to see that once again for Bobo. So Gallison stands at first. Bobo, the left-hander, is due up. Horvath sets and fires as Bobo swings and lines a ball that drops on a one-hop bounce into the right fielder of Holman. Throws it at second. Does he get him in time? And does. Gallison gets out at second. Man. Holman guns him down at second, and Gallison was running. Can't believe it. That was the chance right there. Two down, and Bobo is at first. So Garrett Broussard is due up. Boy, that really hurt. That could be the game right there. Gallison thought he had it. So two down. As Garrett Broussard potentially could be the final out. Bobo at first. As first pitch comes in for Horvath. A strike, 0-1. So two away. Jack Holman just gunned him down at second as the 0-1 comes a little bit above the zone for a ball, 1-1. Holman made the throw in right field. Got to give him credit, but Gallison just a fraction short of getting safe in time to second. So Bobo at first, two down, the 1-1, and finds the right edge of the zone, 1-2. So the Rockers one strike away from securing the victory. What would be their 15th One and two count. Horvath sets in, kicks, winds, and fires the 1-2 just outside for a ball. 2-2, and this whole stadium has erupted. They can't believe that was a ball. 2-2 count with two down. Garrett Broussard, who's 1-for-3 tonight, has crossed home plate. Bobo at first. The 2-2, swing and a miss upstairs for strike three, and that will do it. The Rockers win 6-5. Each team with 9 hits, but unfortunately the Rafters could not find a way to complete the comeback. They were down 6-2, got 3 runs in the top of the 6th, made it 6-5, but they split the series on this long doubleheader between these two squads. So the Rafters just couldn't find a way to come back. They had opportunities, and that really hurt them. Jack Holman throwing out Anthony Gallison at second. He doesn't get thrown out there. There's one down with runners on first and second. So that really hurts them, but the Rafters are going to have to shake this off. They played an unbelievable game. They shelled the Rockers in the first game, winning 11-4. But here in the second game, Green Bay found a way to win 6-5. So the Rafters will hit the road once again tomorrow. They will take on the Fond du Lac Dock Spiders at Herb Baker Field. First pitch is scheduled at 6:35. They got that tomorrow. On Friday, they're at home against the Dock Spiders, and then they hit the road for 4 games. They go to Michigan for Battle Creek for 2 games, and then Traverse City for 2 games before coming home against Lakeshore. But for everybody at Wisconsin Rapids, for the players, coaches, and staff, for everybody at the studio, my name is Joey Fear saying so long from Green Bay. We'll see you tomorrow in Fond du Lac. Good night, everybody.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box?
Many have questioned his testimony and the cases made against the miners. But at the time, many newspapers celebrated the hangings. On the day of the executions, the New York Tribune called the men, quote, the wild beasts of the collieries of eastern Pennsylvania. The Carbon Advocate of Lehighton, Pennsylvania, declared the majesty of the law has been vindicated. The community breathes more freely now that these men, who feared neither the laws of God or man, have met their doom. The day has gone down in labor history as the Day of the Rope, or Black Thursday. The message of the hanging was meant to be sent to all who would dare stand up against the mine owners. In 1979, the governor of Pennsylvania posthumously pardoned John Blackjack Kehoe, one of the alleged leaders of the Molly.
Down the mines, no sunlight shines, those pits, they're black as hell. In mud and slime, they do their time. It's Paddy's prison cell, and they curse the day they try.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
The 6-person majority of far-right supremes, who presently dominate America's judicial system, seems intent on demonstrating that having a seat on our Supreme Court does not mean there is anything supreme about them. Consider one bottom-line measure of character that is central to the court's integrity: financial ethics. This simply requires the judges to file annual reports to reveal any sources of outside income and gifts, thus providing some minimal assurance to regular folks that the eminences are not taking personal payments from moneyed interests seeking favorable court rulings. But unlike all other top government officials, Supreme Court justices have a loosey-goosey system for reporting financial conflicts of interest. It's called Trust Us. Thus, for years, Clarence Thomas has been taking millions of dollars worth of gimmies from a right-wing corporate billionaire while voting to impose this benefactor's plutocratic agenda as the law of the land. Yet, in 2 decades of financial reports to the people, there is not a whisper from his supremeness that he has regularly pocketed a wealth of gratuities from this special friend. Or take John Roberts, the Chief Justice, who poses as a paragon of judicial independence while aggressively pressing an agenda of corporate supremacy over the common good. While he's not known to take payments from corporate interests, his wife does. She's been paid millions of dollars in commissions to recruit lawyers for firms that have business before Justice Roberts. Yet, until this special interest enrichment of his family was recently uncovered, Roberts never mentioned it in his annual reports. Meanwhile, every federal official must agree to abide by a code of ethical behavior, with the exception of 9 officials who have exempted themselves, saying, "Trust us." Yes, the Supremes. This is Jim Hightower saying, since the court refuses to fix itself, the people must. To help, go to fixthecourt.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the insurrectionist on January 6th who jammed a stun gun into the neck of Michael Fanone pled guilty to felony conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding, tampering with documents, inflicting bodily injury on officers using a deadly or dangerous weapon, 12 and a half years he's going to get in prison. And, you know, on the way out the door, evidently, he shouted, "Trump won!" On a certain level, you got to give him credit to being committed to the cause. And committed he shall be. For the next 12 and a half years, he's going to be a guest of the state, and good. I'm sure he will enjoy his time. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the fun and the entertainment in Congress today, I've asked our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So they censured Adam Schiff. Thoughts?
Well, the previous censure, I think, was when Paul Gosar, Arizona Republican, posted an anime when the media depicted him killing Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think it might have included Biden, I forget. Previous to that, there were some censures. I remember right after I left, Congressman Rangel, that was for some tax, you know, forms and things. Schiff has been the target, of course, for, you know, quite a while, and they say he abused his position on the Intel Committee. I think this kicks it to the Ethics Committee now, unless I'm wrong. I think it kicks it over there.
Yeah, but this, and look, I'm not an expert on this by any chance, which is the reason I asked you to come and share some thoughts. This is him, you know, he's using his committee to investigate something. This is, for me, this seems like you're doing something in an official capacity. If this is the case, if we're going to go after him for doing this and being, even if you agree that he was overzealous, shouldn't we be going after Jim Jones for all the, or Jim Jordan for all the Benghazi nonsense?
Well, I mean, we can go after a whole history of people, you know, forever. I mean, going back to, you know, of course, McCarthy did abuse, you know, the committee. But, you know, if they start down these paths, then, you know, anybody that does something when they chair a committee or maybe a ranking member could be up for grabs, you know. You know, of course, they called the resolution false and defamatory, and they were saying, you know, of course, McCarthy was saying that he abused his position. If it goes to the Ethics Committee, they've got to see that, you know, he either did or he didn't abuse his position. And if he didn't, then he got censured for having a different opinion, you know. And I think all of these things that have been going on, even throwing, you know, some people off committees that I don't like some of the people that got thrown off of a committee. But if I was there, I don't think I would want them thrown off committees because we have different opinions, you know. And this has been happening here in the last X amount of years in modern times.
I agree with you, and we agree on the fact that, you know, Marjorie 3 names shouldn't have been thrown off her committees, especially because she's an idiot, and I want her there so I can point to her and go, this is the reason we need X, Y, and Z. But that's a whole nother thing. But I want to get your thoughts. You know, evidently there's some talk that McCarthy has lost control. There was the little dust up between Marjorie Three Names and Gun Fetish Barbie, where Marjorie Three Names called Boebert a female dog, a little female dog. It's the best I can get to the actual wording. Has he lost control, do you think? Or did he ever have control?
This has been going on. You know, Marjorie Three Names, I do call her that now, by the way, as a result of hearing you say it, got into that dramatics. Then she was outside the Capitol. There was a Democrat member from New York. I can't remember his name. And they were going back and forth. And I seriously thought both of them needed to go inside the Capitol, you know. It was name calling and, you know, you should resign and no, you should resign. And it's just, to me, it's getting old. There's so many problems in America. The whole thing's getting old. At some point in time, McCarthy's got to try at least to settle this stuff down. I know, you know, they can say, well, we do what we want. You know, we're elected. Well, that doesn't mean you destroy the decorum of the place. And no. At some point in time, at least when I was there, if people did certain things that were way out of whack, then the prospective party leaders would call them in and say, look, you know, free country, but you don't need to be doing these things. And it's a distraction. And if McCarthy doesn't step in and do something, he's just going to have continuing mounting problems, especially between his own members.
Yeah. Now, if I'm the speaker, you know, if I'm looking at Marjorie Three Names and Gun Fetish Barbie having this little dust up, I just point him to the cloakroom. You know, go back there, deal with however you have to, and whenever you come out, you better be smiles. And if one of you are bloody, then that's fine. But at the end of the day, behind the door, you figure this stuff out, and then you come back out. But we're not that society anymore. Now it's all about getting the social media clicks and getting the attention. And why were they arguing? Because evidently they think that their competing impeachment bills are going to land them on the F channel or the podcast circuit.
Well, I think if you look at the two members yesterday, two of them were thrown out, one Democrat and one Republican in Virginia. Both of them were in the state legislature. Both of them tended to be people that, you know, did the Marjorie Three Names stuff and, you know, said things and the whole drama. And both of their opponents ran against them saying, you know, we're going to be the drama-free people that do our job. And they both were ousted. So, you know, it may play well. Boebert barely won her election. That should have taught her a lesson. Marjorie, I don't know her district. I don't know if they will grow tired of this eventually or not. But it's just, it's so theatrical and so overboard. And maybe I'm just getting old and I just say, well, in my day, I've got to tell you, this stuff did not happen out there to this level years back. This is now political entertainment. They're trying to get their day in the sun or their 5 minutes in the news or whatever. And I think it's just totally wrong.
Yeah, and what's happening is we're not getting things done. This is why I love what Biden's doing. You know, I'll be honest, I love what Joe Biden's doing. It's about getting the job done. As I said a moment ago, you know, on Monday, they're going to get back out on the road, you know, talking about investing in the country and all the projects that are going on. Also, you know, he's been hammering, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because he's been hammering on these junk fees and all this stuff. In fact, he tweeted out today, you shouldn't have to pay an extra $50 to sit next to your child on a plane, pay a surprise resort fee at a hotel to stay, pay $200 to terminate your cable plan, or huge service fees to buy concert tickets. That's why my administration is taking action to curb them. I mean, this may sound like a small thing, but it's an action. It's getting something done. It's moving us, I think, in a direction that's going to help working people, whereas the sideshow we see in Congress just shows me that they're devoid of ideas and any interest in helping people. I'm looking at Biden going, you know, this may be a small thing, but I think this is going to resonate with people.
With the airlines?
Yeah, I mean, with all the stuff, you know yourself. If you want to book an extra, you want to book your seat, you got to pay for extra baggage. You got to pay for a seat that you want. You want concert tickets. It's the service fees are outrageous. Every time you turn around, someone's nickel and diming you to death with all of these idiotic fees that are hidden, that are not hidden. I mean, it's at some point, I think he's onto something that I hope moves us in a direction where we stop getting nickeled and dimed to death.
Well, yeah, he's on to something. Look, he mentioned this in the State of the Union, of course, and he used the example, rebooking fees as much as $200 a ticket. Rick, as you know, I recently went to India. And in the past, when something came up, my dad got sick. With the American air carriers, I called and I had to move my flight one day. And I did it in plenty of time, which allows them to sell the seats, especially international seats. They sell. There's waiting lists. And my charge was, I think, $250 to $300 and some to move that day.
Wow.
Of my flight. This time I booked Air India. I had to move the entire flight twice. And Air India's charge was $5.50. a technical fee. And I was like, wow, how can they do it? But, our American air carriers can't.
Because we got to pad the bottom line, Bob. It's about the profit.
Yeah, they nickel and dime you to death. I mean, I used to fly all the time. I mean, it's just, you're nickel. It's gotten worse, though.
Bob, now you're showing your age. Nickeled and dimed. They're not nickel and diming. These are 20s and 50s now.
Well, yeah, they're dollar and $10 in us now,
I mean, it's highway robbery. I wanted to get tickets for my kids to see a concert, and the fees and all the charges and the convenience fees and the service fees and all this stuff, almost the exact price of the ticket. I mean, it's insane to me, and it's a giant ripoff. And I guess again, I'm sounding old, but I remember when you could go to the box office and buy the freaking ticket from the location. They've got such a monopoly on this stuff that someone's got to do something about it. Again, this is why I think Biden's on to something, because I know a lot of people are frustrated by this.
Well, I think the president's on to something, number one. And I'll tell you where I'd like to see him go with this further. As you know, I flip houses, and certain products and prices went sky high. Then when the supply chain or the food chain got corrected, guess what? It never went down at all.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see somebody look into it, because I think it just all went into manipulation to corporate profit. That's what I think.
And this is where I go, if we had a functional Congress, if we had functional people in the House and people in the Senate who gave a rat's behind about working people, we would have already had these commissions looking into this stuff. We would have had today's Harry Trumans. We would have had the Teddy Roosevelts and the Trust Busters breaking up these monopolies. We'd have this if we had a functional system.
Right, right. Focusing on issues versus theatrics.
Yep. No, I'm right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Bob Nay, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. Got to get your thoughts on the Durham hearing today. Nothing new in my view. I guess, depends, as I said at the beginning, whichever hat you're wearing, the red hat or the blue hat, insert your talking points here, kind of what it was. Anything for you in that Durham hearing?
Yeah, I thought it was all over the board. I thought the most responsible comment on the Democratic side was Representative Jim Hines of Connecticut. He's the committee's top-ranking Democratic member. First, he said reforms are needed, which I believe they are. I could give you a lot of examples. And then he said he believes the committee can work together to address the issues. Well, I don't know. Good luck on that one. But he confined it to the FBI and the FISA court, which the FISA court needs looked at. It's been a rubber stamp. But Hines added that the Durham report didn't find politicization within the FBI, but it found confirmation bias, which is not good. So I thought that was the balance that was needed. Now, it was weird, though, Rick, because on one hand, here's Durham, and he gets criticized for sticking up for Barr, But yet Durham didn't come out with the report that really the Republicans wanted.
Right.
You know, he really didn't.
No, there was nothing there.
They wanted a lot more. So I thought Durham was just going to get it from both sides, you know, on the thing. But I thought that Jim Hines made some really good comments. There wasn't politicization. So when Durham was attacked pretty bad, I thought, okay, well, wait a minute. He didn't find politicization. So it's come and gone. You know, it's done as far as going in and, you know, doing away with the FBI and the DOJ. They're not, Republicans aren't going to be able to do that. So that probably leads to where they'll maybe try to tweak it. But again, let me just throw this out here. How on earth do you tweak a system right now with everything that's going on in the federal court system and with Trump? It doesn't happen. Yeah. Not now. Yeah. Not right now.
What do you think of Trump's defense, his latest defense that's come out, evidently answering a question to Brett Baer saying, you know, the reason I had those classified documents is they were in boxes with my stuff in it. You know, in my stuff, clearly more important than your stuff. I didn't have time to go through it all. So yeah, I mean, maybe they were in there, but it was my stuff.
Well, I think the Brett Baer interview in itself was fascinating.
Yeah.
Brett Baer asked the question about the people that Trump, you know, in one hand said, I've got the best in the world, and he called them idiots and lunatics and crazy people and everything else. A lot of people went to the media, to the right, and were all over Fox News for asking this question this way. Well, I thought it was appropriately asked. And then Trump's answer on the material is going to be what we're going to see, which is, well, I don't know. I didn't, you know, I was president. You think I opened boxes and moved them? Somebody else did it. You know, we're going to hear this.
Yeah, interesting. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on the they haven't found the submersible little submarine that went down to the Titanic yet, have they?
Oh, the submersible?
Yeah.
No, that's so such a sad thing, because I was just thinking today, you know, the intensity of the people within that submersible and what they must be going through. And I was shocked at the price. It's $250,000 for that venture in that. And the CEO of the company is the pilot of it. And the problem with the submersible, of course, is it's not able, if it's in trouble, to come back on its own. It's not like a submarine.
Yeah.
It has to get to the mothership. So as of the last time I checked, there's nothing new. They heard some kind of sound, but they couldn't follow it.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm getting all these all of these interviews. Hey, what must they be going through? What psychologically, what are they thinking? They're thinking, how do I get the heck out of here?
Right. Well, yeah, and because somebody was saying today that, you know, the press will, you know, continue on with this for a while, as the press does, and then they will move to something else.
Yeah, this is one of those things where the fact that there's a billionaire on board, I think, is the reason that we've got so much attention. If it were you or me, Bob, I don't think it'd have made the headlines.
No, maybe not.
No, and people would be mocking us. How dare you use secondhand parts to go, you know, thousands of feet underground? How dare you use refurbished stuff to go, you know, thousands of feet underwater?
If it was me and you, they would say we deserve it.
Yeah,
so.
As I said, lowest bid got the contract. But Bob, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff, my friend.
Thank you.
Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I want to get your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'll take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith.
And this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. It became known in Pennsylvania labor history as the Day of the Rope. 20 Irish miners were hung for allegedly belonging to a secret group of labor radicals known as the Molly Maguires. The Mollies traced their history back to Ireland in the 1840s. The story goes that an Irish woman by that name stood up to the English landlords. Men fighting for Irish rights would declare themselves Sons of Molly Maguire. To what extent this secret organization actually operated in the United States is debatable. Irish workers who came to the United States often faced harsh discrimination. Many job sites would announce, "Irish need not apply." One place they did find work was in the often dangerous Pennsylvania coal mines in Schuylkill County. Franklin Goins, president of the Reading Railroad, controlled the mines in the 1870s. In late 1874, he announced a wage cut of 20%. The miners went out on strike. During the strike, the Mollies were accused of sabotaging the mines and even murdering mine supervisors. The mine operators quickly blamed any act of violence in the region on the Molly Maguires. Determined to infiltrate the Mollies, Goin hired the notorious Pinkerton detectives. The Pinkertons sent in Irish-American James McParlin under an alias to attempt to join the group. Based on his testimony, 20 miners were hung for murder. They were found guilty even though much of the testimony presented in the case was inconclusive and contradictory. In 1979, the governor of Pennsylvania posthumously pardoned John Blackjack Kehoe, one of the alleged leaders of the Mollies. In 1970, Sean Connery starred in a movie based on the story. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Some new polling out on renewable energy. And this comes at a critical time as we're expanding our coastlines, our coastline power generation. You know, wind, we should have wind farms off of all of our coasts to generate the power that we need. I've talked to people who said, look, you know, we have the capacity to be energy independent if we would just do it. Between windmills and solar panels and all of the other technology that's out there, we could have a renaissance, 21st century energy renaissance. Now, does that mean we're going to replace fossil fuels? No, entirely no. But it means we're going to slow the demand, maybe even lessen it a little bit, which is going to make us a little bit better off. But this latest polling out says that by a margin of 2/3, a 47% margin, 2/3 of voters support building offshore wind energy that have strong labor protections. 66% support, 19% oppose. Oddly enough, 16% don't know. A solid demographic. Democrats, 75%. Independents, 36%. 16% Republicans, which, again, you go, what is this love of the of fossil fuels? And I've had this conversation with people. It's almost like the more we say we want to move away from it, the more they cling to it, because, you know, it's almost a birthright. And look, I love my car as much as anyone. I do. I love driving. My wife and I, we love driving. Our kids love driving. We've driven, you know, thousands and thousands of miles, done cross-country tours driving. Love this. We could figure this out. This is the idea of moving in a future direction. Now, workplace safety and living wages are important. In fact, voters view those things as incredibly important. In fact, workplace safety, 89% said, yeah, we want safe workplaces. I was not surprised by that. 82% say the living wages and the benefits are important and an important requirement in doing this. And this is where, you know, when Jay Inslee was running for president, he was talking about this just transition. And I was saying, yeah, this is what we need. We need those people who are going to lose their jobs in coal mines and in coal-fired power plants and in the gas industry. They need to get jobs that are going to replace those. We're going to need to take those skills of pipe fitters and construction workers and use them in other ways to be able to generate what we need. So those jobs are important. And Inslee's plan was, look, you know, we need to unionize all of those jobs, make sure that those come with you know, prevailing wages, benefits that are going to make sure that you have health and retirement security. That's a big deal. Now, interestingly enough, voters really on point with the belief that offshore wind is going to be good for the economy. Two of their top two priorities for lawmakers. By a 37% margin, they believe offshore wind energy is good for the economy. That is good, and they also believe it's good for jobs.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5.